In July of 1977, the newly elected Prime Minister of Israel, Menachem Begin, arrived in America. He had come to meet with President Carter and American Jewish leaders. This was a man at a moment of long-awaited political triumph. He had overthrown the old socialist establishment and achieved the premiership of his country after losing more elections than any opposition leader in the history of democracy. And yet, in the midst of this visit, he engaged in an act that was all about not celebration, but sadness. His trip coincided with the ninth day of the Jewish month of Av, a fast known as Tisha B'Av, when we mourn the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, first by Nebuchadnezzar of Babylonia, and then centuries later by Vespasian and Titus of Rome. A prevalent custom is to spend the first part of this day sitting close to the floor in mourning, as Jews do when their relative has just died. So Begin went to synagogue in the evening and with the rest of the worshipers lowered himself down and listened to the reading of Echa, Jeremiah's Book of Lamentations, which describes the destruction. It is surely something no previous, more secular prime minister of Israel had done. And to the media, it must have appeared utterly incongruent. The prime minister of a restored Jewish commonwealth and reunited Jerusalem, sitting Shiva for a city and civilization that had been destroyed almost two millennia before. But for those who knew Menachem Begin, it was entirely apt. Tisha B'Av is a day of mourning, first and foremost, for the temple. With its destruction, we believe, our relationship with the God who dwelled in Jerusalem was ruptured, became less intimate, and only with the temple's return can it be fully restored. But much more than the temple is mourned on this day. The ninth of Av is known as Yom Shehuchpalu Tzarot LeYisrael, a day on which multitudes of persecution were experienced by Israel. It was on the ninth of Av that the Romans destroyed Betar, the fortress of Bar Kokhba's final forces. It was on this day that the Crusades were declared, and it was on the ninth of Av that the expulsion from Spain concluded. The day is therefore set aside to remember and to bewail the travails of the Jewish people throughout history. The liturgy of the ninth of Av is called kinot, elegies, poetic descriptions of oppression and evil covering several millennia, from the First Temple to the Crusades to the burning of the Talmud in France to the Holocaust. And if there was anyone who internalized the history of Jewish persecution, it was Begin. Stuart Eisenstadt, who worked in the Carter White House, gave voice to how modern American Jews might have seen the new Israeli prime minister by reflecting that, quote, Begin had the familiar look of the Eastern European Jews of my grandparents' generation. He was almost completely bald, wore thick glasses, and had a protruding jaw and a face with a sad look that to my eyes made it appear he was carrying the traumas of the Jewish people in Europe through the ages. In this sense, to encounter Menachem Begin was to meet a Tisha B'Av Jew. Almost 1,000 years before Begin's arrival in America as prime minister, the medieval Jewish liturgist Menachem ben Machir penned an elegy for the massacre of German Jews in the 11th century, which is still recited on Tisha B'Av today. That kina has the common refrain, oh ya li, woe to me, woe to me. Almost 1,000 years later, another Menachem, Begin, described the destruction by the Nazis of Brisk, the Lithuanian city in which he was born, in the following way in an essay. Quote, wrote Begin, 500 Jews were led one day to the banks of the Bug River near Brisk, Ir Va'em B'Yisrael, a mother city of the Jewish people. My father was among them. He started to sing the song of faith on the way, I believe with unbroken faith in the coming of the Messiah. He also called on the others to sing Hatikva. Everybody sang. The Germans pushed them into the river and opened fire on them. The Bug River reddened from the blood of Jews. My father and teacher, my elderly father, was with them. And then Begin concluded with the words, Oya li, woe to me. By adding these words from Tisha B'Av, from Menachem to Menachem, Begin is transforming the death of his father and mother, joining it with the mourning for the murdered throughout our history. in which Jews engage from year to year, from century to century. Essentially, Begin is saying that his mourning for them would never truly cease. He was indeed a Tisha B'Av Jew. And yet, to see mourning as the essence of Begin's life would be incomplete. His own name, Menachem, was given because he was born right after the 9th of Av. It means consolation or consoler. And if Begin embodied a refusal to forget the tragedies of the Jewish past, he also symbolized the remarkable fact of Jewish endurance. That very next day, after sitting Shiva for ancient Jerusalem, Begin went on Meet the Press on TV and was immediately asked about his meeting with President Carter. But Begin had more pressing matters on his mind. He said as follows, on TV.
Your permission, before I answer this very important question, I would like to say a few words about the day we now meet because of its universal importance. Today, in accordance with our calendar, it is the 9th of the month of Ab. It is the day when 1907 years ago, the Roman legions, the 5th and the 12th, launched their ultimate onslaught on the Table Mountain, set the temple ablaze, and destroyed Jerusalem, subjugated our people, and conquered our land. Historically, this is the beginning of all the sufferings of our people, dispersed, humiliated, and ultimately, in our generation, physically destroyed. We remember the day, and we now have the responsibility to make sure that never again be our independence destroyed, and never again the Jew becomes homeless or defenseless. Actually, this is the crux of the problems facing us in the future.
These were Begin's words on NBC. And this, too, is not something we can imagine any previous Israeli prime minister saying. And this, too, reflects something profound. That mourning is not only about sadness and memory of the past, it also has a positive, future-oriented connotation. By refusing to forget what has occurred in the years gone by, our memories and our mourning guide us in how we live, how we lead as Jews. What this means is that even if, unlike Passover or Yom Kippur, the 9th of Av is rarely observed today outside of traditional Jewish communities, it is actually a day that uniquely informs us about how we as Jews remember on the 9th of Av and throughout our lives. As such, a focus on Tisha B'Av is a fitting conclusion to our series. For more than any other day in the Jewish calendar, it embodies the essence of the Jewish approach to time, the meaning of Jewish memory, and the secret to Jewish eternity. Let us explain why this is so. In an issue of the Torah Umara Journal, a periodical of modern Orthodox Jewish thought, an author by the name of Jay Schachter noted that for those standing outside of Orthodoxy looking in, a grieving process for an edifice long gone, the temple, can easily appear insane. As an example, Schachter offers tikkun chatzot, or midnight mourning, something practiced for centuries by generations of mystically minded Jews, not only on Tisha B'Av, but throughout the year. The ritual involves rising in the middle of the night to mourn the temple's destruction. Schachter continues by constructing a hypothetical case study, imagining an elderly observant Jew engaging in this ritual of mourning, being discovered by his assimilated American grandchildren, and assuming that their grandfather has gone crazy. Schachter then gives us a case study that a modern secular psychiatrist might compose in diagnosing today this mourner for Jerusalem with severe psychological problems. Here is the case study, the hypothetical case study, in part. Quote, the patient's grandchildren presented the author with a description of a unique and bizarre pattern of insomnia. According to the grandchildren's report, the patient would arise most nights at approximately midnight. The patient would then go to his fireplace, pick up some ashes, and put them on his forehead. Then he would sprawl underneath the doorway with his face on the floor, muttering unintelligibly. The grandchildren reported that they had confronted the patient about this behavior and that they had received the explanation that their grandfather was mourning for the temple. It was at this point that the author received the initial contact. The author is the psychiatrist. The psychiatrist continues, I'm quoting in part, "The patient obsessed over the loss of his temple, and he constantly hoped to get it back. In fact, it would not be an exaggeration to say that for the patient, hoping to get back his temple was a major reason for living. This temple had been briefly lost once before, restored, and then lost again." The psychologist continues, "On several occasions, the patient's grandchildren told the patient, in no uncertain terms, that it was time for him to accept the loss of his temple and move on. It was, after all, over 1,900 years. The temple was never going to be restored. The patient, on the contrary, seemed to accept all his compulsions as completely natural, denied any distress over the control which they had assumed over his life, and was sincerely amazed that anyone would think 1,900 years too long a time to wait for the restoration of the temple." Now, many traditional Jews today do not observe daily midnight mourning, yet all engage in similar activities on the 9th of Av. And to the uninitiated, the ritual appears insane. Why mourn an edifice that was destroyed 2,000 years ago? Why mourn martyrs' deaths throughout our generations as if they died yesterday? For Judaism, however, mourning on Tisha B'Av and throughout the year is an obvious indication of Judaism's ability through ritual to bridge generations, to take its adherents back in time, to re-experience the trials and travails of one's ancestors, and to refuse to allow them to die. As Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik put it, Judaism developed a very peculiar philosophy of memory. Memory is not just the capacity of man to know events which lie in the past. Memory is experiential in nature. One does not simply recollect the past or just remember bygones, but re-experiences that which has been and quickens events that are seemingly dead. Jews maintain what Rabbi Soloveitchik called a unitive time consciousness. And this, he writes, is what Tisha B'Av is all about. Jews do not sit Shiva for someone who passed away centuries ago. If Jews sit Shiva for a temple, it is because for them, through memory, the temple has just been destroyed. If Jews sit Shiva for those who have been murdered, it is because for them experientially, they have just been murdered in the here and now. The 9th of Av, Rabbi Soloveitchik continues, would be a ludicrous institution if we did not have the unitive time consciousness. We say in the keynote, Bilel Zeh, on this night, my temple was destroyed. Bilel Zeh means tonight. Apparently, said Rabbi Soloveitchik, 1900 years ago is neither remote nor distant from us. It is living. There was a remarkable recently published essay by an Ethiopian Jewish Israeli named Michal Avera Samuel, who informs us that over the centuries, many of the Jews of Ethiopia had no idea that the Second Temple had been destroyed. And therefore, upon arriving in Israel, they actually experienced Tisha B'Av for the first time. They finally got the news of Titus's conquest of the city that had occurred 2,000 years before. Rather than rejoice in the miracle of Jewish restoration, they wept for a Jerusalem that had been lost, and for them, just been lost. She writes, "Up until the age of 19, I lived in a world where the Beit HaMikdash, the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, actually existed. I grew up hearing about the Kohanim, holy priests, and how they worked in the temple. I fell asleep listening to stories about the halo hovering over Jerusalem. We prayed and performed customs that expressed our yearning for Zion. The ideal of Jerusalem was the force that provided us with the stamina to persevere during the arduous trek through the desert. We struggled to keep going despite the terrible conditions because of our goal to reach Jerusalem of gold and after so many generations stand at the gates of the Holy Temple. Then," she writes, "we arrived and discovered that the temple had been destroyed. Learning about the destruction of the temple only as I reached the gates of the old city was an earth-shattering disappointment, and it left a great void in me that I have been unable to fill." It's an amazing story. She arrives at the modern state of Israel and learns all of a sudden that the temple is gone. What occurred millennia ago is news to her. And rightly understood, Tisha B'Av observance is meant to turn all of us into Michal and her family, to mourn for Jerusalem as if it is being lost right now. Tisha B'Av for Rabbi Soloveitchik embodies the miracle of Jewish memory. As he puts it, man heading in a panicky rush toward the future finds himself in the embrace of the past, Bygones turn into facts, pale memories into living experiences, and archaeological history into a vibrant reality. What this means is that the Jewish act of mourning is actually an act of reliving what has occurred. It makes past into present, and by reliving the past, the identity of the Jew is kept alive. A tale told by Jews describes Napoleon passing a synagogue on the 9th of Av, hearing the cries and moans from within. Napoleon inquired what terrible tragedy had just taken place, and he was informed that these Jews were crying for Jerusalem's conquest by the Romans 1,500 years before. And Napoleon replied, "A people that will never forget their city and temple can never be destroyed." This anecdote is entirely apocryphal, but there is another version of this story which actually occurred. William Seward, Abraham Lincoln's Secretary of State, visited the Holy Land following his retirement. And upon coming to Jerusalem on a Friday, he was struck by the streams of Jews coming to the Wailing Wall to recite Eicha, the Book of Lamentations, in the alleyway that was allowed for them at the time. In Seward's memoir, the scene is described as follows. "For centuries, we do not know how many, the Turkish rulers have allowed the oppressed and exiled Jews the privilege of gathering at the foot of this wall one day in every week and pouring out their lamentations over the fall of their beloved city and praying for its restoration to the Lord. The Jewish Sabbath being on Saturday and beginning at sunset on Friday, the weekly wail of the Jews under the wall takes place on Friday and is a preparation for the rest and worship of the day which they are commanded to keep holy. The small rectangular oblong area without roof or canopy serves for the gathering of the whole remnant of the Jewish nation in Jerusalem. Here, whether it rains or shines, they come together at an early hour, old and young, men, women, and little children. The poor and the rich in their best costumes, discordant as the diverse nations from which they come. They are attended by their rabbis, bringing the carefully preserved and elaborately bound text of the Book of Lamentations. For many hours they pour forth their complaints, beating their hands against the wall and bathing the stones with their kisses and tears." And then he concludes with words which could not actually be said at the Kotel today. "During the several hours while we were spectators of it," and he is standing there watching this for several hours in admiration and awe, "there was not one act of irreverence or indifference." Seward gave this chapter with this description, a heading, which is a quote from the Psalms. "Walk about Zion and go round about her. Tell the towers thereof. Mark ye well her bulwarks. Consider her palaces, that ye may tell it to the generation following." He cites, in other words, a verse not about Jerusalem and its destruction, but about Zion and all its glory. And Seward signifies thereby his understanding that in the midst of mourning for Jerusalem, it comes to life once again. Around 80 years later, Menachem Begin arrived in the Holy Land. He, too, went to the Wailing Wall, where the British government, in response to Arab demands, had limited Jewish observance at the site. In response, Begin wrote an article in the underground paper of the Irgun, declaring that, quote, "These stones are not silent. They do not cry out, they whisper. They speak softly of the house that once stood here, of kings who knelt here once in prayer, of prophets and seers who here declaimed their message, of heroes who fell here dying, and of how the great flame, at once destructive and illuminating, was here kindled. This was the house and this the country, which with its seers and kings and fighters was ours before the British was a nation." Mourning through memory creates reality. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik once commented in Yiddish, and here I will use his original Lithuanian Yiddish, not the lesser Galicianian Yiddish, with which some of you may be familiar. I will use the original Lithuanian Yiddish that Moses originally spoke. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik said in Yiddish as follows, "Der churban beis hamikdash hat nicht vernichtet das jiddische Volk." If the destruction of the temple did not destroy the Jewish people, it was due to the fact that over the temple which they had built and preserved in their hearts, over this emotional edifice, over this edifice, over this temple, Babylon and Rome with its armies were utterly impotent. If Jews remained existentially linked to Eretz Yisrael and Jerusalem while dispersed throughout the world, it was because they mourned it still, and in mourning for it, they were there. Begin himself commented that in his childhood home in Eastern Europe, Brisk, he said, Nachon mishambanu, from Brisk we came. Aval noladnu b'Yerushalayim, we were spiritually born in Jerusalem. Precisely because Jerusalem was mourned, it was never forgotten. Because it was remembered, Jews were able to live in Jerusalem spiritually until they could return as a people. The way we respond to tragedy is actually the key to our triumph. And what is true about the destruction of Jerusalem is true as well about the other acts of evil against our people that are recalled and mourned on Tisha B'Av. We mourn those who have come before because we thereby keep them alive to guide us and to inspire us in the here and now. Avi Shilo, in his biography of Begin, describes how, as prime minister, Begin criticized West German Chancellor Helmut Schmidt for pandering to the Saudis to the detriment of Israel. When criticized in the Knesset by a member of the opposition, Amnon Rubinstein, the prime minister spoke from the heart, and he said, "Happily for you, Professor Rubinstein, your mother and father raised you in the land of Israel. My mother and father were never in the land of Israel. They dreamt about the land of Israel, and I will not tell you their fate." Mr. Schmidt, said Begin, who swore allegiance to the Führer, was then in the Eastern Front, where a city called Brisk of Lithuania stood. Can I know for certain that he was not there? Rubinstein, Shilo writes, fell silent in the face of Begin's outpouring. What could he tell a prime minister who mourned for his parents before everyone? For many previous Israeli leaders, the birth of modern Israel meant forgetting the sadness and impotence of exile, deleting our memory of what occurred from the Tanakh to the Palmach. But for Begin, refusing to forget and continuing to mourn what happened before Israel is what inspired and guided him as he led Israel. In today's age, every year around the time of Tisha B'Av, articles inevitably appear which ask the question, the Jewish state is restored. What purpose is Tisha B'Av? Why mourn when we have so much to celebrate? To ask this question is to lose sight of what Tisha B'Av actually means. If a prime minister of Israel still observed Tisha B'Av, it is because he understood that we mourn, not because we do not appreciate the miracles of our time, but because we refuse to forget what occurred in our past, and because we are aware of the fact that the wrongs of our past have not been fully righted. Hatred of the Jewish people still haunts the world, and the holiest Jewish site in the world, the Temple Mount, is one where those who hate us still often deny the existence of the temples that stood there and work to destroy any evidence that it once stood. Yes, Jewish tradition tells us that one day, with the world redeemed, Tisha B'Av will cease to be sad for us. But until then, we mourn because we owe it to the past to remember all that has been lost, to keep those who have come before alive within us, and to continue to yearn in the midst of mourning for what is yet to be. Michal Samuel, the young girl who arrived in Israel to discover that the temple had been destroyed, and describing her motivation for working to fix the current imperfections in Israeli society, the fracturing and the infighting to which the country is prone, reflects that, quote, only upon maturing and having overcome the struggles of integration into Israeli society did I begin to understand how fortunate I was to have grown up believing that the temple existed. I succeeded at forging my personality with the goal of being worthy of visiting the temple. I was fortunate to have had time stand still and experience this deep connection to a temple that in our minds and hearts still existed, resonated within me for many years. In a similar sense, we celebrate the miracles with which our generation has been blessed, of Jewish return to the Holy Land and to Jerusalem. We celebrate Yom HaTzmud and Yom Yerushalayim, but on Tisha B'Av we mourn still, keeping alive thereby all that was and longing for all that is yet to be. In this respect, concluding our series on the Jewish calendar with Tisha B'Av is fitting. It may seem incongruous for us to finish our lectures with this subject, after discussing the Exodus, the giving of the Torah, the miraculous journey of Israel in the desert, the redemptions of Chanukah and Purim, we all of a sudden focus on such a sad day. But the observance of Tisha B'Av must be taken in tandem with all the celebrations that we observe if we are to understand the greatest wonder of all, which is Jewish endurance. Our mourning kept Jerusalem and the Jewish generations alive within us. And our celebrations of previous salvations also provided us with a certainty that we could experience miracles once again. Jay Schachter, in his hypothetical case study about the seemingly insane elderly Jew who mourns a temple from 1900 years ago, has his secular psychiatrist reflect as follows, and I quote in part. The psychiatrist writes, "In all human beings, there is a tendency toward health. Particularly in the case of depressive episodes, people experience loss, grieve, and eventually, though it may take a long time, recover. But," writes the psychiatrist, "there was an unusual factor in this patient's history. He lost his temple twice. In retrospect, this seems to be an event of crucial importance. However attached the patient had been to his temple, had he lost it only once, it seems likely to the author that after 1,900 years, he would have done exactly what his family urged him to do, except that it would never be restored, and move on. But there had been an earlier loss prior to the current one, following which the temple had been restored. Because of this earlier loss, however brief it may have been, the patient acquired the disabling delusion that the current loss would be temporary as well." Now, this point is actually profound. Because Jews had seen miracles of redemption and salvation in the past, they believed ardently it could come again. Because we have seen miracles in our own time, we believe it can come again in the future. To mourn is actually to keep the faith. To mark Tisha B'Av in sadness is to never give up hope for the happiness that is yet to come. There was once a prominent tradition among Jews to begin grace after meals during the week with the Psalm Al Naharot Bavel by the rivers of Babylon, in which the exiles of the first temple proclaimed in the midst of mourning, "If I forget thee, O Jerusalem." And then on Shabbat after the meal, Shabbat which was taken to be a foretaste of the ultimate redemption, this psalm would be replaced with another, that sung by the Jews upon their return to rebuild the second temple. Shir HaMa'alot, B'shuv Hashem Shivat Zion Hayinu Kecholmim. A song of ascent, when the Lord returned us to Zion, we were as dreamers. We recall the mourning for the first temple, and we recall the return to Zion that followed, thereby linking the mourning and remembrance of Jerusalem that was with the Zion that was yet to be. This too Begin understood. In the end, the man who had arrived in America to observe Tisha B'Av and meet with President Carter ultimately returned a couple of years later to the White House to sign the peace accords with Egypt, a moment whose 40th anniversary we mark this year. Begin wrote a draft of his remarks for the event and asked his speechwriter, Yehuda Avner, to, quote, Shakespeareize it. After Avner polished it, Begin then abruptly decided to use his original handwritten version. Avner was a little bit insulted and said, "You weren't happy with my changes?" And Begin said, "Oh no, they're fine. It's just that as I was going over the typed text, I suddenly had the feeling that today of all days, I want to read my own speech exactly as I wrote it in my own hand." And to make the implicit explicit, Avner recalled, Begin added, "I wrote it from the heart and I want to read it from the heart." And it is indeed a speech from the heart, wherein Begin, in an extraordinary moment, standing next to Sadat and Carter, concluded at the White House with the following.
"Therefore, it is the proper place and the appropriate time to bring back to memory the song and prayer of thanksgiving I learned as a child in the home of father and mother that doesn't exist anymore, because they were among the 6 million people, men, women, and children, who sanctified the Lord's name with their sacred blood, which reddened the rivers of Europe, from the Rhine to the Danube, from the Bug to the Volga, because, only because they were born Jews, and because they didn't have a country of their own, and neither a valiant Jewish army to defend them, and because nobody came to their rescue, although they cried out, 'Save us, save us!' De profundis, from the depths of the pit, and agony. That is the song of the Greece, written 2 millennia and 500 years ago, when our forefathers returned from their first exile to Jerusalem and Zion.
And then Begin took a kippah from his pocket and placed it on his head and intoned in Hebrew.
Shira ma'alot b'shuv Adonai et shivat Zion ayinu kicholmim. Azimaleis chok pinu ulshoneinu rina. Az yomru vagoyim igdil Adonai la'asot im eile. Igdil Adonai la'asot imanu ayinu smichim. I will not translate. Every man, whether Jew or Christian or Muslim, can read it in his own language, in the book of the books. It is just Psalm 126.
For Jews in the audience and around the world, it was this moment that will never be forgotten. Menachem Begin was named Menachem because he was born in the period of consolation following Tisha B'Av. And it is a name and a birthday that is apt because his legacy involves the linking of the destruction that was and the redemption that is and is yet to be. Suddenly in Washington, the prime minister named for a month called both Av, but also Menachem Av, the month in which we are consoled. This prime minister at the summit of his career, at a moment of ultimate success, mourns the murdered Jews of the past, refuses to forget how they lived and how they died, and links them to the redemption of present and future. Standing before the world, he makes it known that it was only because of their loyalty to Jerusalem that the return to Zion could actually occur in our time. I am overcome thinking about Begin's parents sitting in Brisk with their young child and singing this psalm of the return from exile to Jerusalem together with this young boy. They could never have predicted, but they would still have believed that the song and psalm about Zion that they taught their little son would one day be recited before all the world, that in that moment he would remember his parents, mourn them, their fellow Jews, and that suddenly at the White House, the murdered martyrs of Jewish history would live again. And if they were all kept alive in his heart, it is because he learned from his parents how to mourn. And he knew that even a prime minister must take out the time to sit on a synagogue floor in the center of civilization and mourn for his people, so that all of a sudden, all those who came before could live once more. More than any other day in the Jewish calendar, it is Tisha B'Av that reflects how Jews will never forget, and therefore why we as a people will never die. Thank you very much. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. If you enjoyed this lecture, please be sure to sign up for future updates and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Thank you for watching.